Hello, I'm Anna, and welcome to episode 45 of the Crime Bistro podcast. Today we are doing something a little bit different. I know for the past couple of weeks we've had some stories that are definitely a little bit heavy. I mean, obviously, since it is a true crime podcast, but you know what I mean. So in honor of the holiday season coming up, we're doing something a little bit lighter, and today we are going to tell some stories about dumb criminals. Obviously, it's still true crime, but it's definitely a little bit more lighthearted. Some of these stories are pretty funny, and it's just a little bit of a reprieve from doing some of that heavier research and investigation for these episodes. So I think I'm going to enjoy this one as much as you are, but of course, as usual, we definitely need some caffeine because today we are not dealing with the smartest people of all time, and it's a little difficult to listen to at some points. So right now I have a watermelon lemon Celsius with me. I have been sleeping in for the past couple of days, so I definitely need something a little bit stronger than coffee to give me a little boost this morning. But grab your own coffee, caffeinated beverage, or emotional support water bottle, and let's go ahead and tell these stories, some of the dumbest criminals. So this first case comes out of Long Island, and it actually took place earlier on this year. This is the case of Matthew Leshinsky, who's only 23 years old, which is just absolutely bonkers. In February of this year, Matthew pled guilty to running a meth lab, a full-on Breaking Bad-style meth lab, but he actually was getting away with it until he called the police on himself. Literally accidentally turned himself in, which isn't great, but I always think it's great when criminals aren't as smart as they think that they are. So anyways, let's talk about Matthew Leshinsky. On June 7th of 2023, Matthew called the police to report a robbery at his facility. This facility was a secret drug lab that he was attempting to pass off as a legitimate scientific lab called Quantitative Laboratories, LLC. Since he had called the Suffolk County Police, they did respond to the robbery in progress, and they found broken glass at the entrance to the lab. Upon investigation of the space, police officers realized what it was that they had just walked into, and this was no small operation. In this supposed quantitative laboratories, Matthew was manufacturing and selling methamphetamine as well as other illegal drugs, one of which was dimethyltryptamine, a hallucinogenic drug. He had more than 100 pieces of lab equipment, chemical reagents, and solvents that were all determined to be components of making meth, and there were a lot of drugs in this space. He had over 3 ounces of meth, 625,000 milligrams of pure ketamine, and 20 plastic jugs that were filled with gamma-butyrylacetone, I think, which is a substance that's very similar to GHB. Oh, and he also had $40,000 in cash. Police officers immediately noticed that there was something seriously, seriously wrong with this space when they first got there, considering that Matthew claimed he was running a laboratory that analyzes cannabis, which means that there would be absolutely no reason for there to be so much production equipment there. Now that he was caught, Matthew really did not have a way to get himself out of this. The drugs were clearly there, the building was in his name, the fake business was in his name. Basically, there just wasn't any way that he was going to be getting out of this one, but that's not to say that he didn't try. During his trial, Matthew was represented by an attorney named David Besso, who took an extremely unique approach to defending his client. David Besso's strategy was not to refute his client's culpability in the crimes. He said that Matthew was absolutely manufacturing the drugs, and Matthew himself had admitted to knowingly producing and possessing the substances that they found. Where this gets crazy, though, is that David Besso tried to paint Matthew as this brilliant scientist. So not someone who was manufacturing drugs for sale, absolutely not. Matthew was studying drug addiction for the public good. Absolutely no way that Matthew could have been selling those drugs and contributing to the intense safety issues that drugs cause among the public. He was actually just doing his civic duty. And David did try to back this up. I mean, he really told quite the story with this defense, which is what lawyers are supposed to do. But he said that Matthew had applied for a license to do this type of study and research with the Department of Environmental Conservation, but that he just hadn't gotten the certification that he needed yet. He said that Matthew was only trying to do the right thing, he just went about it in the wrong way. Which is all great, and I get the argument that he's trying to make here, but that doesn't make it any less illegal to cook literal meth. So I'm assuming that he brought this story about Matthew being a good person to courts so that they would be a little bit more lenient in the sentencing phase. Either way, as you can probably imagine, after calling the police to investigate his own meth lab, Matthew pleaded guilty to 13 charges relating to this meth lab, which included multiple counts of possession of a controlled substance and unlawful manufacture of meth. It's stories like this one that obviously bring a little bit of comedy to the world of true crime, but either way, it is important that someone like Matthew gets caught, and really, he just accelerated that process for himself, which is good, and honestly, you never know. Matthew calling the police to investigate his own meth lab might have saved somebody's life. Unfortunately, in this day and age, we pretty much all know someone who's been impacted by drug addiction and by drug overdose, and this only becomes more dangerous when just a seemingly random person is producing their own drugs. You truly have no idea what is in them and what you could be putting in your body when you buy drugs from anywhere other than a pharmacy. It's definitely an amusing story, but it's also nice to tell a story like this that has a happy ending. Matthew could have caused a lot of damage with the amount of drugs that he was producing, so thank God he's faced consequences. And I can't imagine he would be dumb enough to do something like this again, but of course, you never know. Alright, so this next person is literally all of us. Remember back in high school or college when everyone was on different work schedules and you and your best friend didn't share a day off, so you just didn't know what to do with yourself on those days off? That is exactly how 19-year-old Zachariah Peterson was feeling while his friend was working at a Ford assembly plant near Kansas City. But the difference here is that Zachariah knew exactly what he was going to do with himself that day. In July of 2023, Zachariah made an extremely questionable decision when he placed a call to his friend's employer. This was a Ford assembly plant, and he wanted to get his friend out of work early that day. This seems innocent enough, except Zachariah didn't just fake a family emergency, he faked a terrorist attack. Zachariah called the plant and told them that he was barricaded inside a bathroom on the second floor with guns and explosives, which I genuinely cannot imagine what on earth made him think this was a good idea, but he did it. He claimed to have an AK-47 with three spare magazines as well as a pound of C4 explosives strapped to his chest. Obviously, this garnered a huge effort by police. The plant was evacuated and dozens of officers responded to the call, and over 6 hours were spent just scouring the building for the threat, which they didn't find. And this was, like I said, a major police response, so something like this really does take away resources from other areas and from other emergencies, which leaves other people in the community really vulnerable. Not to mention, this was such a large-scale search for nothing that was conducted using taxpayer dollars, which is also really bad from a legal standpoint. He also cost the Ford production plant a lot of money because they had to completely shut down operations to investigate this threat. And yet, it's this to me that's just the most ridiculous part of this story. Zachariah, let me just tell you where he got this idea from. Get ready, okay? Call of Duty. Yep. So Zachariah had heard of an app that was called C4. He heard of it from playing the Call of Duty video game, and he downloaded that app to his phone. So this was an app that could be used to conceal your phone number. Obviously, this was not successful for him. The only upside to this story is that it's pretty clear that Zachariah was the only person who was involved. So there was only one person in this instance who was stupid enough to come up with an idea like this. There is no evidence that his friend was in any way encouraging him to carry out the plan or that his friend knew about it at all. For the incident, Zachariah Peterson was charged with making a terroristic threat, which he absolutely did, and this charge comes with up to 7 years worth of prison time, as well as a $10,000 fine. Obviously, it's nice to see that if this was actually a real threat, people took it extremely seriously, and they took every precaution that they could to make sure the Ford employees and the community at large was safe. They employed every resource that they could to investigate the threat, and they were able to track down Zachariah really quickly, all of which are really good things. However, the simple fact that he ever thought this would work and, like, go in his favor is genuinely insane to me. I mean, genuinely, like, what on earth was the thought process here? Because he's obviously not thinking straight, that's for sure. I also was really surprised that the fine that this charge carries is so low. Like, $10,000 is a lot of money, but there's no way that it even amounts to a fraction of the financial implications that his call had, both for the police department and for the Ford production plant. It's all crazy, but like I said, the upside here is actually pretty good. Great response time to a potential threat, and thank God it wasn't a real threat and no one was physically harmed. So in that last story, Zachariah Peterson at least attempted to try and cover his tracks by using the C4 app from Call of Duty to hide his phone number. But in this next story, these criminals were so beyond conspicuous that it's genuinely so crazy. This next crime takes place in January of 2024 in Oakland, California, and this one is a doozy. Now, I do have to admit, I've definitely wondered about ATM machines before, right? Like, how much money do they actually keep in there? This group of thieves decided that they were going to find out, except they're in the Dumbest Criminals episode, so you can probably guess that it wasn't exactly a well-executed crime, and actually, the whole thing was captured on camera. So this story starts around 6:30 a.m. when a group of robbers had stolen an ATM from a business on Alameda Avenue in Oakland, and they decided after this that they were going to try and test their luck and go after another one only about an hour later. So shortly before 7:30 a.m., a bewildered bystander picked up his phone and recorded the second crime outside of a Bank of America located on Hegenberger Road, which is a really funny road name. But he saw what he described as three or four people pull up to the ATM, use tools to rip the machine out of the ground so that they had detached it so that the ATM could be moved. Now, I'm not sure if this was just a completely last-minute decision that they had made to try and get away with another robbery of an ATM machine, but the thieves certainly didn't consider the fact that these things are heavy. And apparently they could only come up with one way to move it on such short notice. They hitched it to the back of their van using a single rope and just drove away, literally dragging the ATM behind them down the road. This created a huge racket, and because of the size, weight, and material of the ATM machine, sent sparks flying absolutely everywhere. I mean, this was truly a sight to see. And again, this entire crime was caught on camera by a witness who watched it all happen. So there's a video of the ATM machine being dragged away, and it really looks like that scene from Christmas Vacation where Clark is flying down the mountain in that greased up, like, sled with all the sparks coming out behind him. I mean, it's definitely so funny. If you have the time, look up the video. It's one of those things where you really just have to wonder, like, why? At some point, while they were deciding that they were going to try and steal the entire ATM machine, the fact that not one single person said, hey, how are we going to get this thing out of here, is crazy to me. It's always a good thing when criminals don't turn out to be as smart as they think they are, because it means that people tend to get caught pretty quickly, but still, it's pretty disappointing to think that there are people out there who are that dumb. Like, there are just some people who you look at and you're like, wow, I can't believe that we're even the same species. No offense to them, and I obviously don't know what their situations were or how desperate they were for the money, but I mean, still, like, come on. All right, so this last one is a little bit different. I'm going to read you a story from somebody who posted on the subreddit r/dumbcriminals only about 2 weeks ago and who shared their own experience being robbed by two criminals who were, let's say, not the sharpest tools in the shed. So here goes. This happened about a year or so ago in a casino parking lot. For context, my state has a lot of Native American reservations, and each reservation has their own casino, so there's a significant number of casinos in my state, with most being open on a 24/7 basis. Due to a series of terrible, traumatic events, I'd become homeless about a few months before this robbery occurred, and had been living in my car, a Range Rover, ever since. I quickly found these casinos were a godsend when you're homeless because they provide 24/7 access to restroom facilities, something that can be otherwise extremely difficult to find and absolutely necessary as a female. On brutally cold winter nights when I couldn't afford the gas to run my car for the heat, they were also a source of shelter, warmth, and unlimited free coffee and soda. So despite not having any money for gambling, I frequented casinos quite regularly. There are several reasons why I'm finally telling this story in the Dumb Criminals subreddit, starting with me being the worst possible target and then the actual robbery itself. First, on the day of the robbery, I was waiting for my ex to show up, who was also homeless at the time and for the same reasons as me, so we've remained friendly. We had a hotel booked about an hour away, and we were just gonna leave my car parked at the casino to save on gas. I was absolutely exhausted. Sleep is really hard to come by, especially at night when you're homeless, and I got to the casino a few hours early, parked in the outdoor parking lot in front of the casino where security rarely frequented, and took a nap. Reason number two. This was on a weekday, in the middle of the day, meaning there was a decent number of open spots in the parking lot. My car was parked as far from the doors as physically possible. Had even a single brain cell existed among these robbers, the distance from the casino coupled with the length of time I'd been parked there should have been a dead giveaway that I wasn't there to gamble and did not have pockets full of money. If any of them did possess any brain cells, they must have been instantly silenced upon seeing that my car was a Range Rover, albeit an extremely dirty one. When the robbery occurred, I was actually outside of my car, having walked around to the rear passenger door to start packing my stuff for the hotel, so that I would be ready to just jump in the truck and leave as soon as my ex arrived. I'd been doing that for about 3 to 5 minutes when a car sped towards me and then slammed on the brakes behind my car, blocking me in. Before they were even out of the car, I knew what was happening and had already shut the back door, opened the front passenger door, and had put myself in position to grab my own 9mm handgun. Unfortunately, I had not had enough time to actually grab it, as there was a bunch of stuff piled on top of it. I had to keep it out of sight on casino property, plus everything that I had left in the world was also in that car. The thing that actually surprised me was it was two African American women that got out of the car, one of whom had a gun. She acted really confident, but the way that she was holding it was a dead giveaway that she was not comfortable with it and pretty unlikely to use it. They tell me, "This is a robbery, give us your cash." And I told them, "I don't have any cash, I'm homeless, and I live in this car. I'm just waiting to meet someone here." Logic says this is the point when they should have gotten back in their car and found a new victim, but of course, logic requires brain cells. Reason number three. One of them tells me to turn out my pockets. As I put my hands into my pockets, and this is the reason I'm not posting this from my main account, I suddenly remember the ounce of crystal I had purchased for my ex and I before arriving at the casino, as well as the $60 cash that I had left over from buying it. My car keys are also in my pockets. Obviously, I'm not keen on giving them any of that, so I looked them dead in the eye and I said, "There's absolutely nothing in my pockets." And they believed me. No one checked. You truly have to be another kind of dumb to rob someone and not double check when they tell you that they have nothing in their pockets. At this point, the other woman, who didn't have a gun, walks around to the driver's side, opens the driver's side door, and starts looking around my car. So I'm obviously watching her and no longer paying any attention to the woman with the gun, also using that opportunity to move myself closer to being able to grab my gun off of the seat. My only fear was them finding it before I grabbed it and taking it off me, and there was no chance that I was about to let that happen. The first thing that she spots is my phone sitting in the cup holder in between the seats. At that time, I had a phone case with a card holder at the back where I kept my ID and my debit cards. Losing my ID would have been really shifty because you need an ID to get into all the casinos, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to check into the hotel later that night if I didn't have it either. I fully expected that she was going to take my phone, but I'd had so much stolen from me in the preceding months that I was pretty numb at that point. I just didn't want to lose my ID, so I shouted at her, "Don't you dare take my ID." This in turn pissed off the woman with the gun, who started to realize that I wasn't paying any attention to her anymore, and she shouted at me, "Did I say you could speak? This is a robbery. I have a gun pointed at you. I could shoot you. Do you want me to shoot you?" I just shrugged and said, "Don't take my ID." I should point out, this was nowhere near the first time I'd had a gun pointed at me, including a few instances where I did truly think that I was going to die, and as I mentioned earlier, I immediately got the impression that she had no intention of actually pulling the trigger. If this post gets any type of attention, inevitably somebody's going to declare that this is another reason why we need gun control. Most of my beliefs would be labeled liberal. I used to consider myself a strong Democrat, these days more independent who leans Democrat, but as the actual person who experienced this, not just this, but the multiple other occasions where I've had a gun pointed at my head, and not just someone who's reading about it, there is not one single time, including the times I thought for sure I was about to die, that I thought, this is why we need gun control. And in this particular instance, I was extremely grateful that I had my gun, and my only regret in that moment was that I hadn't grabbed it faster. Do not use what happened to me to claim that we need laws that will only leave people helpless to defend themselves and embolden criminals who can commit crimes without worrying that their victims might also be armed. I absolutely guarantee that the gun these girls had was not legally purchased and certainly not registered to either of them. Gun laws would not have kept it out of their hands. And if you think it's far-fetched or some cheap excuse when people say all stricter gun laws will do is keep guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens without even slightly decreasing gun possession amongst criminals, you are overwhelmingly naive as to what the world is really like. You learn a lot of things being homeless, and one of the things that is very quickly apparent was that if you want a gun, all you have to do is ask a couple people, and you'll have one as soon as the same day, and often for less than they cost to purchase at a store. The fact that I was also armed that day was the only equalizer between me and them, and I truly think the main thing that kept me calm and in control. So that, plus the actually extremely traumatic few months of hell I just endured, meant that I had absolutely zero capacity for fear, and honestly didn't care if I lived or died. And just as a little side note before we get back into the story, I do want to say that I'm not saying that's something that, you know, reflects my own beliefs. I don't really like to share my own beliefs, you know, this publicly as it is on a podcast, but I always think that it's really important to understand the perspective that people have when they're going through these things. And it's interesting to see kind of the different perspective from somebody who used to be in a really good position, obviously, in their life, and then became homeless due to whatever circumstances. I think it's really important to understand kind of what somebody's life experience can do in terms of how they view the world, how they view our political environment, and things like that. But anyway, I kept that part in the story, not because it's relevant to the story, but I just think it is always important to look at people's opinions and understand them based on the experiences that those people have had. Anyway, back to the story. Reason number four, my car was absolutely packed with stuff, which I'm sure did seem overwhelming to them. However, anything of value, including $200 headphones, my wallet with a few sentimental pieces of diamond and gold jewelry stored in the coin compartment, my $3,000 MacBook, $1,000 Surface Pro, and of course my 9mm SIG were all in the front passenger seat, and most of that in my purse that's just sitting on the seat in plain sight. Rather than looking herself, the one without the gun says to me, "Yeah, this is a robbery. If you want to live, you better give us a reason to leave. You've got something in this car, so hand it over." Now, this was, in fact, the exact opportunity that I needed to grab my gun, and I had no intention of wasting that, though I didn't want to make it obvious that there was something I didn't want them to see. So I just repeated what I'd said before. "I'm homeless, I have nothing." But I added that I would like to try and find something, and I started shuffling things on the passenger seat. My hand was quite literally inches from my gun when the girl who was holding the gun either got spooked or suddenly realized how long they'd been standing there on a live monitored security feed pointing a gun at me, or she actually just believed what I was saying. Like, maybe people think that no one can lie if they have a gun pointed at them? I don't know. And she told her friend, "F this bitch ain't got sh, let's go." Realizing the other one still had my phone and ID, I once again demanded that they give me back my ID. Rather than taking my ID out of the card case and walking off with my phone, this girl took one single debit card and tossed my phone with my ID and other cards back in the car. I actually needed that debit card, so that pissed me off. So I called this girl a bitch, which resulted in the gun being once again pointed right in my face, and this was the only time that I actually thought that she might use it, apparently feeling the need to defend her friend, as she said, "What did you just say? Say that again and I will shoot you." That moment gave me the opportunity that I needed to take a step back and reposition myself just enough to actually grab my gun. I'm honestly not a violent person, and for many reasons, I was hoping not to have to use it, though mostly I was not in the mood to have to deal with going to a police station and possibly getting charged, though I'm 100% certain, due to the significant security footage of the whole incident, that if I had used my gun, it would have been ruled self-defense, and also I didn't want to have to potentially explain to casino security why I had a gun on the property. I did confess that I had the gun, and even that I was trying to get it both to the police and casino security while I was giving my statement after the fact, and the reaction from both was that going for the gun was the right thing to do, and the casino actually seemed to take no issue with it so long as I didn't leave it in my car. However, I also hate being told what to do, to the point that even if I wanted to do what you told me to do and was even about to do it, I'm probably gonna do the exact opposite rather than let you think that you've won and you have any kind of power over me. So I replied, "That bitch stole my credit card, it doesn't even work." Which was actually true, as I actually always froze my debit cards and only unfroze them when I needed to use them, then immediately froze them again. Even if that hadn't been the case, by leaving my cell phone, they'd left me the means of freezing or canceling the card within seconds of them driving away, and long before they'd even get the chance to attempt using it, which is reason number 5, these were some of the dumbest criminals to ever attempt a crime. Reason number 6 is they did, in fact, attempt to use the card on Amazon, which, if successful, would have meant a delivery address at the very least, and considering the lack of thought that they gave everything else, I wouldn't at all be surprised if they used their real Amazon account with their actual identity and home address. But Amazon didn't even attempt to charge my account for almost 3 hours after the robbery took place. As I don't know what they attempted to order, I don't really know if that means they waited 3 hours to even try and use the card, or if they did try and use it right away, but forgot that Amazon didn't charge the card until it ships the order, making it quite possibly the worst place to try and use a stolen card before the owner can report it stolen. I've often wondered in the years since what would have happened if the one who had stolen my debit card hadn't actually made it to their car and shouted to her friend, "Let's go." Would she have shot me for doubling down on calling her friend a bitch? If she hadn't run back to the car in that moment, it was only seconds before she was about to find a gun aimed at her. Would she have shot me the second she realized what was happening? Would she have left? Would I have shot her? More than likely, if she hadn't immediately left or surrendered upon seeing my gun, I would have shot her before she took it as the reason that she needed to shoot me. I do wish I could have seen that moment of realization that I was not the weak, unarmed victim they had taken me for, but I'm so glad that I didn't have to shoot anyone that day. While I would have loved to have seen them get arrested, I do believe that no one gets to that point without having experienced significant pain and trauma and struggle in their own lives. While that doesn't justify their actions wouldn't have made their death any less tragic. It's a really messed up world that we live in. This story actually happens to be a story about the world's dumbest police officers as well. As they drove off, I was in fact able to get the license plate of the car. One thing that's important to know about me, I struggle with certain elements of visual memory, with faces being the most difficult. Even if they hadn't worn masks, there would have been zero chance I could have provided their description to the police beyond female and African American. I can't even remember how tall they were. Cars are also very difficult for me to remember, and I often rely on things like license plates and make and model when having to remember an unfamiliar vehicle, such as friends' cars, rental cars, or even my own car the first month or two that I own them. I can remember, though, words, letters, and numbers, even conversations from years and years ago with almost perfect clarity and recall, but not what something looked like. On one occasion, I met up with a girl from college who I had done a group project with at a McDonald's. The plan was to go from the McDonald's to the apartment of a third group member when they got off work, who was a friend of the girl that I met up with. This was before everyone had Google Maps on their phones, so it had been decided that the easiest thing to do would be to have me follow the other girl from the McDonald's. It ended up being about 2.5 hours before the third group member called and said to come on over. We were expecting it to be about 15 minutes, but ultimately we ended up getting along great and spent that whole time chatting, though we each stayed in our own cars just with the windows rolled down, which meant I spent 2.5 hours essentially staring at this girl's car. Just as we're about to head off for the apartment, she decides that she's hungry and wants to go through a drive-thru first. She says, just follow her when I see her come out of the drive-thru. She drove a Cadillac, and there's not a ton of those, so I started repeating to myself, follow the caddy, and watching for a caddy to exit the drive-thru. I guess they were busy or slow, because more time than I'd have thought had passed when a Cadillac finally exits the drive-thru, and so I follow. I followed that Cadillac for damn near 20 minutes until it arrived at a gated private garage, entered said garage, then quite literally stopped just beyond the gate, preventing me from following them into the garage. A gated garage had never been mentioned to me previously, and I recalled being told this person only lived less than 10 minutes from McDonald's, which was when it finally dawned on me that I'd been following the wrong car the entire time. They were not even similar. The one that I followed was black and pretty brand new. Hers was light colored and about 20 years old. The 15 minutes or so that had passed while she was in the drive-thru were all it took to wipe the memory of the car that I just spent 2.5 hours staring at from my brain. Over the years, I've learned some tricks to cope with this lack of visual memory, and I was absolutely determined that at the very least, I'm going to be able to describe the car. I got the license plate number, the color, and the make. They sped off too fast for me to see what the model was, and there was no chance that I could see a car and just know what it is unless it's something truly unique. I called 911 and I told them what happened and provided the most articulate and calm description of the car and the three occupants. I never saw the driver, but there was in fact a third person driving the car. I found out from casino security that they actually drove to the employee parking lot, the only other outdoor lot, which I'm guessing that they didn't know it was for employees, after they had left me and attempted to rob another woman, who I guess was really shaken up and traumatized by the whole ordeal, but had absolutely no cash because she was an employee, not a patron. The cops who arrived to take my statement asked me for a description of the car, and I provided them with the exact same thing I told 911 on the call. What was their response? Oh, we actually just saw that car. I know exactly which car it is. We drove past them on the way in here. I don't know if the 911 operator failed to pass along the car description or if the cops failed to pay attention to it, but that has to be the absolute worst police work imaginable. Adding to that, he'd felt something was off about the car as they drove past, which is why he remembered seeing it, but for some unknown reason he didn't run the plate, and apparently neither did dispatch, despite it being provided on the 911 call, because if he had run the plate, then and there he would have discovered that that car was stolen. He then made the decision that there was no chance they wouldn't have dumped the car by now, despite having driven the car at least 4 hours and across state lines after having stolen it, so it wasn't worth issuing an alert. Every aspect of this crime, the stupidity of the criminals, the casino security somehow having no idea that this was occurring, despite there being a live video feed playing right in front of them for at least 5 minutes, they did confirm it was caught on camera but were oblivious until I went and told them what had happened. And the cops literally driving right past the criminals, noticing them and letting them get away, is just the most what the heck just happened case of incompetency I think I've ever encountered. I honestly feel a little bit of imposter syndrome when I tell this story, knowing people assume that this was in some way a negative, traumatic, or otherwise scary experience for me, when at the end of the day, I just find the overwhelming incompetence of both the criminals and law enforcement amusing and possibly a little bit depressing. So, yikes. I'm glad that everything turned out okay here and that no one was injured, but I mean, honestly, it's just a sign, right? Not everyone is cut out to be a criminal and not everyone is cut out to be a police officer. Not to mention, the people who do think that they are cut out to be criminals sometimes are just genuinely that dumb. And it's a good thing because they're that dumb, because if you're robbing somebody, why would you believe them when they tell you that they don't have anything worth robbing? It's all very strange, and I'm glad that this woman is safe after this whole ordeal, because not to mention, she was on security cameras that were live feeding into the casino the whole time, and no one noticed. And the robbers didn't even notice for like a good 5 minutes, as she said. So for them to have taken such a huge risk like that, and then just to get lucky enough that no one was paying attention on the cameras at that exact moment, I don't even know. And then the actual, like, only thing that you steal is a debit card that she says that you can't use, and then you try to use it to order something online with a shipping address. I don't even know. Any logical person would have approached this situation a lot differently. I mean, honestly, I don't even know what these people were trying to accomplish by trying to rob this woman. They obviously wanted cash, but she had cash in her pockets and they didn't look there. So were they trying to rob her for money, for things that they could sell? Or maybe they just wanted to try their hand at mugging to see if they'd be any good at it. And I doubt that they tried it again after that went so poorly, but God only knows. With people like this, they might have tried again the same day. I mean, who knows? Also, it's clear from the story that the person writing this was pretty comfortable with firearms and also comfortable with using them and operating them. So it was her instinct that these women weren't trying to like actually cause her physical harm and that they weren't going to actually use the gun that they had. But if you ever do find yourself, God forbid, in a situation like this, never assume that someone isn't going to hurt you. Anyone can be pressed to do anything if they're desperate enough, so don't ever take advice from stories like this. Do not assume that someone isn't going to hurt you just because you really never know. It worked out in this case, but it might not in others, so just be sure that you are all staying safe out there, no matter how funny that story might be. I mean, the police officers being like, yeah, we just drove by them. I hadn't read that part of the story before I read it on here, and I'm sorry, that's just so funny. Like, what are you doing? Anyway, that is all that I have for you today. I actually really enjoyed this one. I'm really glad that we got to do something that was a little bit more lighthearted and just not so intense. Obviously, true crime is extremely serious, and it's really, really important to be telling the true crime stories that we tell on this podcast. It's unbelievably helpful to families when they know that they're being supported and they know that people care about their loved ones and care about what happened to them. But sometimes it can get a little bit heavy and you just need a little bit of a reprieve. And there is always like a good side to things. This is like a funny good side to things, I think. But anyway, like I said, that's all I have for you today. So if you are still here, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Crime Bistro podcast. A little bit more casual today, but you know, it's nice to have a laugh every once in a while. Happy Thanksgiving if you celebrated, and I'm really excited to get into the holiday season. We've got some good stuff coming up. So I really hope that you enjoyed this one. And like I said, that is all that I have for you today. So as always, until next time.